You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome back to ESPN Scrum Reset for another week. It's Sam Bruce in the host chair, joined as per usual by Christy Doran. And Christy, we're going across the ditch for a special guest this week. One of our colleagues who was such good company at the World Cup, of course, had a little bit more joy than we did, but didn't get the desired finish. It's a big welcome to the potty for Ollie Ritchie, mate. Welcome.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me. Good to be here. Yeah, some good times over in France, that's for sure.
I'll tell you what, Brucey, it's just nice. You know, once upon a time, it wasn't long ago that there was a fair bit of tension across the ditch from either side. I feel like this coming together is just an opportunity to put that all behind us.
Well, mate, you'd have to say the Aussie teams are performing a little better than perhaps we expected. So Super Rugby Pacific, I think, is, you know, headed in a positive-ish direction, we can probably declare. But one team that isn't headed in a positive direction, and it's... you know, probably not hugely surprising, but to the extent of which the fall has taken place, Ollie, your beloved Crusaders, mate, you're a proud Christchurch man. I think we knew that they were going to come back to the pack this year, but potentially not this far. To be winless through five games, a new record for that franchise. Rob Penny in all sorts of trouble. I mean, you just wouldn't read about it. The Crusaders in this size of a hole, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and the hole doesn't seem to be closing either. It only seems to be getting bigger at the moment, doesn't it, Brizzy? And you know, you, there's a little bit of context to keep it in. Yep, they've been absolutely hammered by injuries. A lot of frontline All Blacks on the sidelines. But you expect better from the Crusaders. Crusaders fans expect better. You know, we did think that it would come back, that they'd come back to the pack. I think everyone can agree on that. When you lose the caliber of players that they lost last year, and you know, Richie Mwanga and Sam Whitelock and Lester Fanganuku and obviously Scott Robertson as well, you know, it always felt like this was going to be a tighter season, but to be winless through five games is not good enough by Crusaders standards, and it's kind of get worse before it gets better, you feel.
The story of the Crusaders is for so long has kind of been this next man up mentality where, you know, injuries and All Blacks rest weeks have been, they've had to negotiate for the past six, seven, 8 years, however long that's been happening, probably a couple of World Cup cycles at least, that the guys coming in, fringe members of the squad, just come in and get the job done. But the players that you mentioned there, your Whitelock, your Mwanga, Fanganuku, and then compound that with the late injury ruling out of the season for Will Jordan, was a massive blow to Mighty Williams in round one with that hamstring, I think it was, and you've still got Ethan Blackadder yet to lace him up this year. It's just a couple of players too far, it seems like, this year, and I don't know whether that comes back into, you know, just those extra few players being pulled out of the New Zealand, that word, that country was, system year on year, just leaving that little bit of plugging away at the absolute depth, you know, the length, the breadth of depth that New Zealand has, and this year it's finally caught up with the Crusaders.
Yeah, and I think they didn't think they would have to go as deep as they've had to go. You know, they're onto their fourth choice or fourth string first five at the moment, you know, and this was one where Fergus Burke had sat in behind Richie Mwanga for a couple of seasons, kind of learning his craft, getting a bit of Super Rugby experience, and then they lose him to an Achilles injury at the back end of MPC, not back until April. Then they're forced to go down to, you know, second, third, fourth, and we're just seeing that gap up to Super Rugby from MPC for some of these guys is just proving too great. I think there is some good young talent in that team, and a lot of players will be better for the experience that they're having at the moment, but I think we are seeing a big drop off in the calibre of talent coming through, and that gap just widening, that gap from MPC up to Super Rugby proving a little too great for some people. You know, Taha Kamara is a prime example. Nabbed him out of the Chiefs Academy a couple of years ago. Big rips on him. Young talent. You know, you got to remember he's kind of only 19 or 20. But, you know, you can just watch him and feel like he's not quite comfortable at that level yet. And, you know, that's been the story across the board in several positions for the Crusaders. So, you know, Rob Penny can't catch a break at the moment. And he's under all sorts of pressure because you're right, that next man up mentality has served the Crusaders so well for so long. But right now, that gap and that step up is proving all too great.
Can you bring us in, Ollie, into what kind of pressure Rob might be facing? And it is interesting, the context of it as well, because I know that there was a 20-point defeat on the weekend, but up until then, there'd been a 4-point loss to the Chiefs first up and a 4-point loss to the Hurricanes only a couple of weeks ago as well. So it's not like they've been a million miles off the pace, but yeah, 0-5 off the back of being losing his last 5 matches with the Waratahs, it certainly doesn't make for pretty reading.
Yeah, and 0-5 easily could turn into 0-6. They host the Chiefs this Friday night as well. Look, the pressure is absolutely mounting. I'm not suggesting that, you know, he's going to be sacked mid-season. It's not really the Crusaders' way. Certainly not, you know, New Zealand Super Rugby teams don't tend to go down that path. But, you know, the Crusaders fan base demand a lot, and they certainly demand a lot more than they're getting at the moment. So, you know, Rob Penny is going to have to go back to the drawing board, as he has done time and time again, and try and dig his team out of this hole. Because if they lose on Friday, which is a very real possibility against the Chiefs, who have, you know, been one of the front runners early on in this competition, if they drop that game, they're 0-6 and they're pretty much in must-win territory just to make the top 8. And not making the top 8 would just be unacceptable for the Crusaders, even in a year when you lose this much talent. So I'm not thinking he's in danger of being sacked, but, man, he needs to get a win very soon.
Who do you think's been the biggest out for the Crusaders this year? And I know it's difficult to say one name. Mwanga's probably the obvious one because of all the changes at 10. But, no, even Sam Whitelock, he saved the Crusaders quite a few times last year, not least in the final, but earlier in the year against the Blues by coming up clutch a couple of times with those breakdown turnovers.
Yeah, I still think it is Mwanga. I mean, your 10 is your general, right? He is driving that pack. And, you know, I think Richie Mwanga will go down as one of the best Super Rugby players, you know, of all time. And at the moment, the Crusaders are just missing that leadership at first five. They're missing someone to steer that ship. You know, how many times did we see the Crusaders, you know, living off back football and Richie Mwanga would come up with something out of nowhere? You know, and that's the kind of spark that they're missing. I absolutely hear you on Sam Whitelock as well. You know, the amount of times he would dig them out of a hole, and just his calmness and his leadership, you know, that's what I wonder at the moment is where is that player who has been there, done that, who can just bring a sense of calm to this team when things aren't going well? You know, and when you lose Scott Barrett for 6 weeks to a broken finger, you know, there's a guy who's been there and done that, and suddenly you don't have him either. You know, and you know, David Havili is trying to do as much as he can at the moment, but he's only one player and he's in a back line that's living off scraps and going backwards. So, you know, when you lose a guy like Sam Whitelock, you lose much more than just a world-class lock. He is such a calming influence. He's a leader in that group, and he just knows how to get the best out of those around him. At the moment, I don't think there's someone out there who's just calming this group down and is able to lead them out of this situation.
Yeah, Rob Penny must have spied a couple of black cats over the off-season, given his run with luck. I'd forgotten about Scott Barrett, of course, with that finger injury. Ollie, if we pivot slightly, and Whitelock's a great example of, you know, all three of us were there that night with that amazing finish, the quarterfinal against Ireland, who gets over the ball and wins that turnover, none other than Sam Whitelock, just proving his class yet again. And if we broaden it, as I said, to look at Test Rugby for a moment, and a few interesting reports coming out of New Zealand in the last couple of weeks, with Scott Robertson being up in Japan and checking in on the guys who are eligible, Artie Sevilla, Sam Kane, and I think there's Shannon Frizzell in that as well, or is he 2-year deal up there?
He's on a 1-year deal, but he'll have to play NPC rugby to be eligible. Bowden Barrett's the other one up there who's eligible to come back.
Of course. But right since Razor took over last year, this debate around eligibility has really gone front and centre in New Zealand, hasn't it? I mean, we've had it for many years in Australia with the Giddo Law. We've gone through various cycles of it now where we're not quite sure how Joe will approach it this year, despite sort of saying that his preference will be to pick from home soil. But then last week we hear this report that Razor's gone to Sam Whitelock and said, Sammy, we need you. A couple of questions to you here, mate. Does this come back to what we were talking about beforehand about that level of depth just being picked away? Obviously, after every World Cup, there's any number of departures, and this year the All Blacks have been hit massively. But with Mwanga as well, I mean, what is that, such this pursuit of Richie? We know how close they are. I agree, Richie's probably the best Super Rugby player of all time, in my mind, just look at his record. But what's that message sending to a Damian McKenzie then, who's staying at home, doing the business for the Chiefs, I guess Bodie by extension as well? Just what's the feeling, mate, I guess, in New Zealand at the moment around Razor's recruiting mission, if you like, and just where this eligibility piece might land?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and Razor's been beating this drum, like you say, really since he sort of came into that job and signed that contract last year. Richie Mwanga is a world-class first five who Razor really doesn't think has actually reached his ceiling in international rugby yet. And when you look at the runway through to the next World Cup in 2027, you know, that is a chance for Richie Mwanga to, what Razor hoped would be a chance for Richie Mwanga to just own that All Black number 10 jersey. And the way we saw Dan Carter do for so many years, just be that guy. And, you know, he's gutted that he's lost the ability to do that, I think, Scott Robertson. He's obviously very close with Richie Mwanga. And, you know, he talks about how he just feels it's a bit of a waste having someone as world-class as Mwanga and not having him eligible for the All Blacks. Now, New Zealand Rugby is not going to change their tune on this. So, in a way, Scott Robertson is sort of fighting a losing battle here because they've made it very clear about what their thought processes around eligibility and you know, players who have served the All Black jersey well are rewarded with these sabbaticals up to Japan, like what Artie and Bowden and Sam Kane are on at the moment, who will all come back and still be eligible for the All Blacks. So, you know, you can go up to Japan, you can make your big money, and you can still be eligible for the All Blacks. That's New Zealand rugby's way of rewarding those guys who have given a lot to the black jersey. But yeah, he is desperate to see Richie Mwanga back in a black jersey. I even think, you know, if he was to see out his contract in Japan, which is obviously no indication that he would not do that, and then come back in, I think, 2026, I think Scott Robertson's still hopeful that even then there might be enough time to embed him back into Super Rugby, get a few more tests under his belt, and he can still be the All Blacks' first five at the 2027 World Cup. Now, whether that comes to fruition, nobody knows. But yeah, certainly, I think he feels like Richie Mwanga hasn't quite reached his ceiling in international rugby yet. And on the Sam Whitelock issue, that's a really interesting one that's kind of divided opinion over these ways because, you know, he has been such a great servant of All Black rugby, but, you know, he's 36 years old, you know, played 1,000 test matches, it seems like, and now it feels like this is the perfect runway to start embedding some of those younger guys. You've still got Scott Barrett there, an experienced All Black lock. You've got Tupouva'i, who's played for the All Blacks for the last few years. Josh Lord, who's got test experience as well. And importantly, you've got a long runway. You know, the World Cup's not next year, so, you know, you've got time to actually build these young locks up and get them ready to excel at test rugby. So, you know, the idea of getting Sam Whitelock back seems to have divided opinion over here. And, you know, some who, you know, just want to see a legend of the game back in black. But others who I think feel like that ship has sailed and now is the time to give some of those young upcoming locks a bit of runway to establish themselves in test rugby.
There's so much to chew over there, isn't there? And it's interesting when Sam Whitelock, he came in as the Crusaders captain. We've got to remember that one of the first decisions that Scott Robinson made was to take the captaincy away from Kieran Reid and give it to Sam Whitelock at the Crusaders, and we know how well that turned out to be. Well, I personally think that a couple of things. One, I think there's so much strength and depth in New Zealand still. You look at the quality, and you only have to look at Super Rugby, and three of the four top teams at the moment in the competition are New Zealand's outfits, and they will continue to churn out talent, probably particularly in the back line, where it just seems like there's an embarrassment of riches. But speaking of Richie, does he want to go to the next World Cup, perhaps with Tonga? I think it's Tonga that his heritage. And even Dane Coles earlier in the year, there was a conversation that I was on with Japanese rugby, and he was put up. And question was asked, Richie, should he be eligible to play for the All Blacks? And Dane Coles came back and said, look, I think he's got other things in mind, and that might include Tonga. So there could be a real tug of war there. And perhaps the idea of playing for Tonga has come about because of the eligibility laws and policy at the moment. But I've got to think that with New Zealand and rugby and Rugby Australia, it's two different kettles of fish there. Rugby Australia needs to win and has struggled to win for a long, long time, winning at 40%, less than 40% since 2016. The All Blacks have still made World Cup finals during that time. They haven't let slip with the Bledisloe Cup, and they've dominated Super Rugby. So I would be doing everything I can to maintain integrity of Super Rugby in New Zealand at the moment. That's my personal thought there.
Yeah, and I think you echo the thoughts certainly of New Zealand rugby, and you know that's kind of the thought process behind the New Zealand rugby eligibility criteria. Is you're exactly right, Christy. It maintains the integrity of Super Rugby, and you know they can't afford to dilute that competition by allowing you know every man and his dog to go and play overseas and still be eligible for the All Blacks. That would be a disaster for New Zealand rugby if they allowed that to happen. That's why they have that very specific criteria at the moment of allowing some players a sabbatical into Japan who have served the All Black jersey well, or have served Super Rugby well. You know, these guys, Sam Kane, Bowden Barrett, Artie Savia, who are over there at the moment, you know, these are 100 test or very close to 100 test All Blacks who have earned the right to do that. And you're right, you're going to absolutely dilute Super Rugby if you go in a different direction. So, you know, I wouldn't be changing anything at the moment if I was New Zealand rugby. And it sends a message to some of those players in Super Rugby at the moment. I think Geordie Barrett has a sabbatical coming up, possibly next year as well, that, you know, if you give enough service to this game, to this team, you know, you will be rewarded with those sorts of opportunities to go away and to make money and to experience, you know, another culture and another country and, you know, another style of play and still be eligible. That's the win for those guys, as opposed to letting everybody do it.
How much, Ollie, do you think Damien McKenzie's performance in Bledisloe 2 last year in Dunedin affected his, I guess, rap as a test number 10 option? Because, I mean, the Wallabies dominated that first half, clearly couldn't go on and get the win in the second half with a few changes. Is there a school of thought that he just can't cut the mustard at international level, that he might actually be better suited to fullback at an international level than rather than with that, you know, reduction in space and time that he's so effective with in Super Rugby? And, you know, when he has when he's bringing the ball back on the counter, it's brilliant and opens up the game better than anyone else in the competition. But you don't get those opportunities in Test Rugby, or you get fewer of them, clearly. Is there a school of thought that he's just not up to it at test level?
No, I don't think so. And I you know, he will be the first to admit that, you know, he was below his best in Dunedin for that Bledisloe test. But, you know, a lot of All Blacks were. And I think we saw at the World Cup, especially throughout the World Cup, actually, Damien McKenzie became a real asset for the All Blacks. And admittedly, that was off the bench and just to provide that spark that he was. And, you know, I actually think in the World Cup final, you know, he almost could have gone on to win that for the All Blacks. He just provided a lift, and you sort of felt like something could happen with Damien on the field. He needs a bit of time in the saddle, though, you're right. The more time he plays at 10 for the Chiefs, the better he'll be. But Test Rugby is a different beast to Super Rugby, and if Damien McKenzie is going to be a world-class first five at Test level, he's going to need time in the saddle. And I think we saw a little bit of that during the World Cup, but I think this year will be the real proof. You know, he is likely to get the first crack against England at first five, and it'll be interesting to see how that combination with Cam Roygaard develops, because Cam Roygaard was another one who took a, you know, an almighty step last year and proved himself to be a more than capable test halfback, and you know his omission from the All Blacks for the latter stages of the World Cup still baffles everyone over here. So I think, you know, there could be a good wee combination to form there between Damien and Cam Roygaard, but yeah, Damien needs time in the saddle, and you know this will be a real moving year for him if he's to prove that he can be a test first five.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about the backs here. We all know that the games were won and lost up in the forward pack, and I reckon the other thing that we haven't touched upon with the Crusaders and their struggles, you know, young George Bell, he's come in and Cody Taylor's not there, and that's you know, the ability to be able to retain your ball and then play off set piece is so important. What do you think up front? Like is there many, you know, in the front row, right across that pack? How many positions do you think are going to be open under Aizen?
Yeah, I think there'll be a few, and you're batting on about George Bell, and gee, didn't he battle on Saturday against the Blues. The Crusaders line-out was as bad as I think I have ever seen it. It was almost like the final in 2022 when the Crusaders picked off every single Blues line-out, it felt like, and then the roles were reversed this time. He just could not find a target, and when you can't find a target, you're right, your attack starts to suffer. I think there are definitely options for Razor to look at, particularly in that tight five. You know, Scott Barrett's a nailed-on starter at lock, but, you know, who partners Scott Barrett? You know, does Tupouva'i have the inside running there? Do they go to a Josh Lord, a Quinton Strange? You know, you'd have to think Cody Taylor, Samisoni Takiaho in the hooker spot, but, you know, what's the makeup of your props? And, you know, the Crusaders have got enough experience at prop at the moment. You know, they have All Black playing there. You know, Tamaiti's injured, obviously, but, you know, George Bauer is an All Black. You know, Fletcher Newell is an All Black. These guys have test experience, have big game experience, and haven't quite been stepping up yet. So I think there's certainly going to be some selections for Razor to look at in and around that tight five. And, you know, even the makeup of his loose forward trio, I think, will be interesting. You know, does Sam Kane and Artie Savia come straight back into it? Who is his blindside flanker? Because Shannon Frizzell was the first choice last year. Well, he's not eligible this year, or certainly not until he plays NPC. So who's going to fill that blindside role? I think there's, yeah, a lot of questions up in the air around who's going to fill those spots in the pack. And at the moment, I think Scott Barrett is the only one you can probably nail on as a confirmed starter, or Cody Taylor as well, potentially. But remember, he's not back until, I think it's round 10 for the Crusaders. So there's a lot of questions to answer there.
Pretty exciting, isn't it, Brucey?
It kind of makes you want to just get to June or July, rather, and as quick as we can and start the process all over again. Two big tests against England who, you know, really started to show some promising signs, or at least some evolution in their game under Steve Borthwick, with that win over Ireland and narrow defeat to France in the final 2 weeks of the Six Nations. Ollie, if we just look off the field briefly for a moment, mate, in New Zealand, you must have been aware that the NRL, they played their opening games in Las Vegas this year. Did you see that? It looked
a lot of fun.
It was incredible, wasn't it? Off the back of that, there's talk about, you know, greater expansion out to 20 teams possibly in the future. And David Moffat, I think a mate of yours, Christy, is spearheading the Christchurch bid. A bloke who's been involved in both rugby and rugby league for best part of probably three decades now, really. The new stadium's coming. We're all looking forward to that. I think, Christy, you and I might have to make the trip over for that opener there in 2026. As I said, a potential second New Zealand franchise would be based in Christchurch, or at least a bid. I think the NRL's pretty keen to leave the North Island for the Warriors as such. And if they were to expand in New Zealand, then the second team would be in the South Island with Christchurch, with the new stadium, obviously, being the clear front runner. Is there the interest there, Ollie? What do you think that would do to the Crusaders brand, if anything? I know they played it. It's not Orange Theory Stadium anymore. It's
Project Stadium, mate. No one's had more name changes than that stadium.
The shed.
The park.
True. I think you should just call it the Christchurch Shed, because that's what it reminds me of, really.
Exactly.
A full house there for that. But was that a one-off, do you think? Is there genuine interest in a New Zealand, a second New Zealand rugby league NRL franchise, particularly in the South Island? And do you think New Zealand rugby are at all concerned about the way that NRL just seems to be enjoying its moment in the sun in New Zealand?
Yeah, I think there is genuine interest in a South Island expansion team, and we saw it was a really good crowd. I think it was sold out for the Warriors against the Raiders over the weekend. You know, and part of that is, remember, a bit of a novelty factor when the Warriors come to town, because they don't often do it. They're always based in Auckland. So when they do play in Christchurch, there is that novelty factor of people wanting to get along and support them. But, you know, NRL is sort of taken off over here over the last few seasons. The Warriors have always been very popular. Certainly their success last year sort of reinvigorated that brand and got a lot of people in behind them. So I think there would absolutely be a bit of appetite for a second franchise based out of the South Island. I don't think New Zealand Rugby will be too worried. You know, they're very positive about the way Super Rugby is going this year. They've seen a big uptick in viewership numbers through the opening rounds compared to last year. I think the on-field product is helping with that, right? You know, we're not seeing TMO interventions every time someone scores a try. I think it's been officiated very well. We've seen good tight tussles. We've seen the Aussie team step up. We've seen the Crusaders a shambles, which probably also helps with interest as well. So, you know, I think New Zealand Rugby is pretty content with how things are going. But, you know, certainly if a second NRL franchise was to start up in the South Island, it would give a bit of competition to the Crusaders. But the Crusaders rule that town. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think that won't hamper their effect, their ability to get crowds along and to sell that stadium out. I think, you know, I think the more teams down there, the better.
It is an interesting one, though, and I think it would absolutely be a threat. And it's just with basketball and the rise of basketball in New Zealand as well, it just means more competition. And maybe that's not a good thing for a New Zealand rugby brand, I don't think. But for the Warriors, they were once upon a time, if I'm not mistaken, the Auckland Warriors. They're now the New Zealand Warriors. And I think also that idea of the representing the entire country can only have been a positive for the Warriors brand. And when you go to Christchurch, it's not the Auckland Warriors, it's the New Zealand Warriors. So those little sorts of things, I think, can actually go a long way in harnessing community fan engagement. But I got a number of text messages, especially from agents on over the weekend, by saying, you know, New Zealand Rugby's got to watch out for you because of that crowd. So I'm sure your phone would have lit out as well, Ollie.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that was, I think it was a real sign of the interest in the Warriors. But, you know, I do think you have to remember the novelty factor of it as well that I come back to, and that they, you know, they get one game down there a year. So, you know, if you're into league or if you're a Warriors fan, you know, why wouldn't you get along? It would be interesting to see a team down there and how, you know, based week in, week out, what that crowd number will be like. You know, I think the narrative of this kind of threat to rugby union over here has been going on for a couple of years now, and it really took off last year. You know, but there was one occasion I remember that the Warriors were playing on the same night as the All Blacks, and there was this storyline about, well, this is going to be interesting, right? What are people going to be tuning in for? The Warriors, the All Blacks absolutely left them in their dust. I mean, they just had almost triple the amount of viewers that the Warriors did. So I think that was proof that actually rugby, and, you know, remember, it is the All Blacks, of course. It's not like it was, you know, Super Rugby. You know, the All Blacks will always rule over here. But, you know, I think, you know, they might be a little bit worried about the threat, but I think they'll be pretty confident with the strength of the All Black brand, and particularly with Scott Robertson at the helm now, who's going to probably do wonders for that All Black brand. You know, for having him as the face of the All Blacks brings a lot of energy, a real character, you know, something a bit different than they've had, you know, for the past decade, really. So I think they'll be dining out on that a little bit as well, and they'll be putting Razor front and centre at any chance they get.
I think, gents, it's, you know, it's worth looking at it from a talent development perspective as well. It's a, you know, an issue that Australia has struggled with for years of young kids who play both codes growing up, and clearly, you know, rugby league is number one here, and is vice versa across the ditch. But if you had another team in New Zealand, we know that the NRL franchise in Australia already bring, you know, 17, 18 year olds across to Australia. Have them finish their schooling in private schools in New South Wales and Queensland, and play a bit of rugby. And all the while they're contracted to those NRL clubs. Beyond that, I just wonder if there's, you know, perhaps the greatest concern would be about stripping out just a few more of the top level kids year on year because they have got that second New Zealand team. And I guess from a broader perspective, if it does expand to 20 teams, well, there's, you know, there might be 15, 20 more contracts for New Zealand kids at that age than there are already, which is, you know, clearly a number. You only have to look at every NRL side across the comp has, you know, got a handful of Kiwis already.
Yeah, certainly. You look at, like, I immediately think of Roger Tuivasa-Sheck at high school, right? And he was a high school rugby star. But, you know, the NRL scouts are everywhere. It's an interesting point to raise, Brucey, because the scouts are everywhere, right? And they're coming over this side of the Tasman more often than not, and they're actually probably hitting a lot more high school rugby games now and seeing that, you know, seeing that player drain from high school into those NRL codes, and, you know, they get given contracts at 18 years of age and, you know, told they can be the next big thing. And, you know, Roger was all of it was, you know, very much going to be a, you know, an all-black star when he was at high school. And, you know, he's turned into, you know, he got a couple of tests for the All Blacks, but, you know, he's very much a leaguey. So, yeah, it's a fair point that player drain, could dilute the talent pool even more if we see a second NRL franchise in New Zealand. But, you know, I think you'd like to think that the stocks in New Zealand rugby do go deep enough to sustain it, but certainly the proof might be in the pudding.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Outstanding question, Brucey. I love it. Ollie, I'm curious from your perspective around the idea of closing the gap. Has Aussie Rugby or Super Rugby closed that gap? Or do you, from your perspective, is it too early to say, or is it just the Crusaders that have struggled that have kind of led to this idea that perhaps the competition is a stronger one with more jeopardy in it?
I think the gap is closed, and I think, you know, let's come back to this at the end of the season, right, and see just how close that is. But all we can judge on is the opening five rounds, and I think you'd have to say that the gap has closed a little bit, you know, and the Crusaders' inability to win a game will certainly add to that. But, you know, you look at the Reds who pushed the Hurricanes to golden point, and, you know, the Hurricanes are unbeaten. Obviously, the Waratahs tipping up the Crusaders, the Brumbies tipping up the Highlanders. I think we're going to see more and more Aussie victories over Kiwi teams. And, you know, I had the Reds, you know, as one of the big movers, probably up until Saturday night. I certainly didn't see that result coming against the Force. But, you know, I think under Les Kiss, they seem to have just, you know, come on leaps and bounds this year. And I'm really impressed by the way they're going. And, you know, they're yet to get James O'Connor back. You know, and at this point, you're sort of asking, do they need him really? Because everything seems to be ticking along quite nicely. And, you know, obviously they'll want to put a line through that game against the Force. But, you know, I can see them, I can see the Brumbies in particular being a real threat come the business end of Super Rugby.
Yes, mate, I don't think anyone saw that result coming. Least of all me, I've been hammering the Force in the last couple of weeks and therefore must eat a bit of humble pie. Christy, they were mightily impressive. I can't remember a Force performance. You know, they've eked out wins over the years, playing a really gritty style, but ruthlessness is not a word you have ever associated with the Force, but I think there was an element of that on Saturday night. They scored some really nice tries. Hamish Stewart was brilliant at 12, but any number of players, you probably could have given man of the match performances too. Was that the first sign, do you think, that, hang on, you know, Simon Cron, we actually can see something in what he's doing over there? The Reds were obviously very, very poor, but for the first time in a long while, I thought the Force looked like a legitimate rugby side.
I don't think it's the first sign. I think it's the third sign. The first sign, I think, was against the Rebels, the second a week or two later against the Brumbies, and then most recently this one on the weekend. The Force had played 50 good minutes against the Rebels, and probably 60 good minutes against the Brumbies, but just a couple of reckless, headless kind of moments had meant that they lost. You're right, they were significantly better, but once they were helped from a couple of drop balls from Harry Wilson, who he had some great moments, but had some equally horrible moments too. They've still got depth issues, and that's particularly up front in the top five. Until they kind of solve those issues, Sam Carter just been announced. He's kind of been linked to them for some time, but his arrival will help. It's really in the front row, which to me are the big issues, which will mean that they won't be able to regularly compete against the top opposition. And that's at hooker. It's definitely both at loose head and tight head and prop. A really good positive sign, Ben Donaldson running the ball much more. He just seems like he's growing from strength to strength. Sam Spink, the directness that he offers at outside centre, that's a really pleasing thing, and him being back. Nick White, the control that he offered, I think, at nine as well was a really significant one. And Morgan Taranui made mention of it. They out enthused the Reds, but you just particularly saw that at the counter rucking. There was two or three times at the counter ruck to turn it over, and that just goes to show that the Reds were not quite right. Their line out didn't function with the same detail that it usually does, a precision there. And so I actually think the loss comes at a good time for the Reds, and before a big game against the Brumbies, it's almost a bit of a reality check that, hey, that's what you dish up then. We saw way too often under Brad Thorne. You've actually got to be... It looked like that, and I know I'm just throwing this out there, it looked like they turned up after a big night on the piss. That's how they played, and I'm not suggesting that they did.
You can feel like that after a flight to Perth, in fairness.
But the just the simple things that they did wrong just looked like they were struggling and had a big one. But I'm sure they'll be able to bounce back against the Brumbies, and this is an exciting one where they hopefully will get 25,000 at Suncorp, and if they do, that's a really good signal of the hard work that they've done has managed to bring through the 10,000 swing kind of fans that will rock up when you're going well, but also will decide to turn on the rugby league if you're not.
Yeah, good call. Massive game at Suncorp on Saturday night. Ollie, who do you think the All Blacks would least like to see in the Wallaby 10 jersey during the Rugby Championship? We kind of see it as neck and neck here at the moment. There's probably four contenders, maybe five. Each got their individual strengths and weaknesses, clearly, and all, you know, on the right side of 30, probably on the right side of 25, to be honest. If I asked to pick one tomorrow, I think at the moment you probably would go Ben Donaldson. Clearly, goal kicking is a concern across the board. What do you think the belief is in New Zealand? Who do the Kiwis see as the most talented Aussie 10?
I would agree with you on Ben Donaldson. I think he's had a wonderful season so far, and I think he could go on to become an incredibly astute Wallabies 10. I still think there's a lot to like about Carter Gordon, you know, and I think it's unfair to judge him on that year under Eddie. I think his talent is much deeper than that, and I think he can have a very successful international career the more minutes he gets under his belt. A little bit like Damien McKenzie, in a way, more time in the saddle I think will be good for him. So I'm not prepared to put a line through Carter Gordon just yet, and I thought, you know, I think we started to see glimpses of the potential, and you know, unfortunately, he's, you know, in a Rebels team that's probably going to be struggling for a lot of the year. But you know, still, I've been, you know, in some of those early performances, I've been impressed with his direction and the way he's led that backline and led that attack. Puts guys in space, has kicked well, you know. So I still think there's a lot to like about Carter Gordon. You know, early days, but you know, those two names I think would be near the front of the pack. And I think over here it's certainly the feeling is it's unfair to judge Carter Gordon too harshly on the year he had under Eddie Jones. I think there's a lot of potential there still to unpack.
It's neck and neck, and I think it's, at the moment it's too hard to actually come up with a definitive answer. Like even 12 is a big issue for Australia at the moment, because Hunter Bosami, I think he's probably the favourite, and it gives them that directness and the punch in the midfield that's required these days, but he struggles with the the tempo of matches at times to control that. But in addition to it, he's very susceptible to head knocks, and that's something that we can't, you know, when you've got a long term strategic kind of thing around the lines in a year's time, and obviously a home World Cup a couple of years after that, you've got to start thinking, well, who's going to actually be there for more than a week or two? And Paisami just hasn't shown that over the last couple of years about being able to back up routinely. I wonder whether or not there's the potential of a Carter Gordon to even go to 12. We saw him at times there last year against France, I think it was, in a warm-up match, but also against Argentina. He's not a big body, but he's quite tall. And there may be some flexibility there if you can get a sharpshooter at 10, be it a Noah, be it maybe a Ben Donaldson. I wonder whether or not Carter Gordon at some point in time is thought of as both a 10 and a 12.
Noel Olesio as well, we can't forget it, the Brums. And if they go deep into the season, then that will only strengthen his case, you would think. Was that the best performance, Christy, from the Brums on the weekend? Obviously, Moana Pacifica fell away after halftime, but it was certainly, you know, had a lot more commitment to it than the previous, certainly, half hour against the Highlanders in Dunedin. A little bit of razzle-dazzle at the finish with Tom Wright and Corey Toole combining so nicely. And is that a combination we might see at some point at test level as well? And Ollie, maybe you chime in here after, Christy, whether you think Corey Toole's worth a run at test rugby as well. Was that the game that the Brumbies needed to really build that confidence within themselves?
I think it absolutely was. There's always an asterisk whenever you come up against a side like Moana Pacifica, particularly that had a fair bit of travel. They'd gone from Perth to New Zealand back to Canberra. They've got a few injuries. I think they were missing Juliet Sevilla in the midfield. But that was a really good performance. Defensively, they struggled a little bit. The Brumbies inside their attack in their defensive 22, and that's an issue because it's been an issue for the last 5 weeks, and perhaps still some teething issues. They were a bit slow out of the blocks, but I love the Tamati Tua gave them a lot of punch in that midfield themselves, and that just allowed Noel Olesio to have his best game in more than 12 months, I think, where he ran the board of the line, he got his hands free at times, and the front football, the vision that Tom Wright has and often plays with, I think he's the perfect person for a Corey Toole out wide. That was a fabulous try, the crossfield kick to Tom Wright, to Corey Toole. It's not just the vision, it's the execution, because we've seen lots of these guys do crossfield kicks, but that was awesome to watch. And I know that I showed the few people that were around the household that, because it was one of those ones where you put on the highlights reel and you're really proud of that, this in our game, that the ability to crossfield kick inside your 22, it doesn't happen in rugby league very much. This is a great thing about rugby. So that was awesome. Jerome Brown, another guy that offers physicality in the back row. And I thought it was a good performance from the Brumbies.
I think it had to be a good performance as well, because the Brumbies were, you know, pretty underwhelming against the Force, started slow against the Highlanders. You know, it was a real chance for them to make a statement, actually. And I think if they'd just sort of scraped by and, you know, probably were never in danger of losing that match to Moana, but I think if they'd just sort of scraped by and, you know, put kind of 3, 5, 10 points on them, it would have been another kind of what if. But I think the fact that they were so clinical and really put the foot on the throat and absolutely hammered them, I think it was a real statement performance from the Brumbies, and, you know, stamping their credentials as, you know, one of the top Aussie sides. You know, don't forget about them, because that just shows you what they can do. So, you know, those games can easily turn into banana skin games when you should have the win in the bag. But, you know, I think the way they were incredibly clinical and turned out a real statement performance, I thought, I was mightily impressed. And, man, Corey Toole's just got gas, doesn't he? I mean, wingers with just out and out gas is just so good to see. And I think back to that try he scored under the roof against the Highlanders at the start of the second half. And I know it wasn't just a walk-in try. You know, he had a bit of work to do, but he just put a foot to the floor and he just gassed it. So I think he'd be an exciting prospect on the wing.
I've written actually early on that. I think Corey Toole, I can't think of a better finisher in Australian rugby since Drew Mitchell, Brucey. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. But secondly, Billy Pollard, he's a guy that with some minutes is now starting to show what he's capable of, because he'll be the best running hooker in Australia probably already. It's the throw that's the big work on for him, and it was a really good performance. I'm excited to see how he goes against Matt Tressel this weekend.
Yeah, going to be a number of matchups that Josh Quinn will be interested in across the board, you would think. Quick one on Charlie Cale, boys. You know, he reminds me a bit of, and this is an alarmingly early call, but there's a bit of PS piece about him and the way he runs. Check it out next week. And you remember where you heard it first. Big rangy, good speed, something in the way that there's a bit of a swagger about the head as well, I think. And just jumped in. I think he ran 10.8 or something. He wasn't the rumour out of South Africa back in the day for the 100. Pierre, he could certainly motor that bloke. Anyway, we'll push on. The Waratahs, golden point, a heartbreaker. Tane Med gets his shot and just absolutely shanks one. One of the ugliest drop goal attempts I think I've seen in quite some time. Kemu Valentini gets his shot under advantage, has a hell of a lot more to do. Took three steps forward, dodged a couple of defenders and slots one.
He's the ultimate Iceman, isn't he? He's done it a few times. I think against Crusaders last year as well.
So another loss for the Waratahs, more pain and pressure for Darren Coleman. But they, you know, they let this one get away from them in that first half, didn't they, Christy? I think it was 26-10 at the break, stifling conditions between the heat and the humidity, and then a few downpours just to even things out as well. Had fought their way back, had the chance to win it, muffed that one. It's just, you know, deteriorating week on week, really, isn't it?
You're not wrong. It was another missed opportunity. Two point defeats followed by a three-pointer. And you think about, you compare that to almost the Crusaders, and the big difference between Rob Penny and Darren Coleman at the moment is Darren Coleman's third season and the progression probably isn't quite there. You can understand a few close defeats with the injury toll that Rob Penny has at the moment. Look, there are issues. There was quite a few of them, but defensively in the midfield particularly, wasn't it? Where with a few times Izzy Parisi struggling there with Marcy getting a first half hat-trick and the goal line defence wasn't great there. Just missed opportunities is the big one for the Tars, and that one with Evan really sums it up there. And I thought they rushed it a little bit. Jake Gordon, it was the first opportunity where they got close to the goalpost, where they'd moved it from the left side of the field to the middle, and they just needed one more ruck to just settle things down, ensure that Edmund was there and in a position, because there just wasn't enough forwards to make it hard for the Fijian defence to rush and put some pressure on Edmund. So, it's a coach killer for him. Lockie Swinton had a really, really promising cameo off the bench. 10 runs he made in half an hour of footy. He was great around the ruck as well. Amasero probably had his best cameo as well. So, There was a few kind of shining sort of positives you can take out of it, but
I feel like we've had that kind of week on week now for a month though, Christy, as well.
And that's why I tried to make that link and the comparison with Rob Penny, that eventually it's going to come. Enough is enough, and you start going, you know what? All the talk, all the speculation probably hasn't helped with Darren Coleman, but I think there'll be a judgment pretty soon. The Rebels game this weekend, it obviously goes without saying that it's a must-win match for the Tars. And if they were to lose that one, it's so hard to get any of the fans back on board, because the hard-fought, gritty defeats, they count for nothing if you don't bank those matches where you need a win. And here's a weekend where they need to.
Ollie, what are you made of the Waratahs this year?
Yeah, just so, you know, there or thereabouts without really being able to put the nail in anyone's coffin. You know, Crusaders victory aside, there are games that this team should have won. Obviously, the weekend is a prime example of one that slipped. You know, another one against the Highlanders, which is, you know, a missed penalty on full time away from victory. And, you know, they come up against a Blues side who's struggling, and they were underwhelming. Stephen Petefetta was not at his best, was kicking woefully, and they still can't find ways to finish those teams off. So I think that's a bit of a sign of how things are going at the Waratahs at the moment, watching, you know, obviously watching from afar and not being close to that camp. It's just, you know, opportunities, but an inability to just really put the nail in teams' coffins, really. And you know, that pressure is going to continue to mount on Darren Coleman. And, you know, I read somewhere he was given the first four games of the season or something like that. I mean, you know, if these losses continue to mount, you'd have to think it's probably going to be curtains for him at some point. Yeah, it's starting to get quite frustrating to watch, because they get themselves into positions and can't go on with it.
Christy, I know you're a massive fan of Teddy Wilson, the Waratahs heir apparent at number nine, the Australian under-20s captain from last year. Spent the last couple of weeks playing for the academy, I think, in games against the other Aussie super sides academies. We saw Jack Grant was there on the bench. And now this game, as we mentioned, went into Golden Point. Went pretty much to, 90 minutes or so thereabouts. And Jack Grant didn't get on the park at all. Are we going to see Teddy Wilson at some point later this year? Will he get a start or two? Or do you think Darren Coleman is completely wedded to giving Jake Gordon as much time as, you know, he virtually wants, I guess?
Yeah, I don't think there's a knock on Teddy Wilson. It's just, it's exactly that. Darren Coleman's wedded to his skipper here. And he played 86 minutes, the entire match on the weekend. I don't know of any halfbacks that are doing that in the competition. In Lautoco, it was right at the end of the game. It still felt like 35 degrees out there. I looked it up on the weather charts. With the amount of running that you've got to do, there's no way you should be doing that. And it's not just last weekend or the weekend just gone. It's the entire competition to date so far where there's not the confidence and trust in your backup players. And this was a real shortcoming of Darren Coleman, where Bernard Foley would just play 80 minutes week on, week on. And eventually it meant when Bernard Foley wasn't there, there wasn't the experience and the depth and the quality to bring in, because there hadn't been any kind of backup plan beyond Foley. So we're seeing that at the moment with Teddy Wilson, even Jack Grant on the weekend. How the Islanders have done it in the past with Aaron Smith and Filau Fakatawa was elite game management from the respective coaches, because it just allowed for Fakatawa to come in and to play the good rugby he is this year, because he was getting 20 minutes or indeed starting matches with Smith coming off the bench at times. And I'm sick of talking about it because we keep bringing it up, and it's not just the Tars and Jake Gordon in this example, but Teddy Wilson is an elite defender. He's a left footer. He's got a very good pass. There's no way in the world that he shouldn't be playing. And my understanding is Rugby Australia is asking questions about this too, because they can see there is New Zealand interest in Teddy Wilson. I don't think he'd be going, but there's New Zealand interest in a Teddy Wilson, and he's getting fed up because he's not playing. And he was close to signing with the Rebels last year. You promised the bloke that he's going to get minutes, and he's not receiving any this year. It's a head-scratching moment right now around the development management, and it smacks of a coach who's desperate to get his team to win. And I can understand that with a leader, but you've got to look beyond the short-term results at times.
Is this a situation, Christy, where Peter Horn can step in, or is this the problem with centralisation? The Waratahs, you know, the first ball through the gate, if you like, with Rugby Australia on this. Is this a scenario where this could happen, or the exact problem with it as well?
Oh, I think it will happen, but I think it's just Peter Horn's only got himself just recently under the desk at Rugby Australia. So he's not the only one. Joe Schmidt, they've all just arrived, and I would almost think it would be slightly unfair to start imposing yourself midway through in a season. But going forward, it's exactly that. Here's another good example. My understanding at the moment with Stephen Larkman, and the Brumbies are trying to re-sign him at the moment. Larkham's dealing heavily with Phil Warren, Rugby Australia. So read into that what you want, but there is much more alignment from a high performance perspective at the moment within Rugby Australia and their respective super sides.
Ollie, before we finish up, mate, have the Hurricanes gone past the Chiefs as tournament favourites over there? Are there questions still to be asked of this team, or do you like what you've seen through 5 weeks to be convinced enough that, you know, they are the real deal?
Ask me in 2 weeks, Brucey, when they host the Chiefs at Sky Stadium. I must say I'm quietly surprised by the Hurricanes this year. They have been a surprise package. I didn't have them there. I had them kind of a mid-table, really. But, you know, Clark Laidlaw has come in. Sevens background, I thought, you know, there might be a bit of a bedding in period, essentially. But, you know, he's built that culture. They've got Brad Shields back, who is a wonderful Hurricane for so many years, and you know he isn't skipped a beat. He's ready to go. It looked against the Rebels and Palmy North. You know they've got Cam Roygaard running the show from nine. Brett Cameron's just returned to career best form. Geordie outside him. Ruben Love I think will be the starting All Black fullback for the first test against England. I just think they're building quite nicely. But I think they've got real tests to come. They've had two big ticks against the Crusaders and the Blues. The way they held out the Reds, I thought, was impressive to do that and Golden Point. But I think their big test is coming in a couple of weeks in Wellington when the Chiefs come to town. That'll be a real measure of where that group is at. But look, certainly they haven't put a foot wrong so far. And, you know, the way they've been able to grind out some of these victories has been very impressive. So the big one for them is coming in a couple of weeks when the Chiefs come to town. And if they can get the job done there, then you have to start looking at them as serious contenders.
Joel, what about TJ Perenara? Like, wow. Like, it shows a lot about the depth still in New Zealand rugby when a guy like him can come in. And he just had a cracking game and his first start in a long, long time. He got... I think it was his 59th try that he scored as well. So he had just close to the Israel Flower on 60 and Julian Sevilla on 61. So he'll be telling Craig Laidlaw, the coach, said, mate, you've got to play me so I can break this record.
Yeah, exactly. And like, what does it say about TJ to come back from those two injury setbacks? You know, he hasn't played in a couple of years and, you know, still fit as a fiddle, and impacting the game the way he has. And, you know, that to have the mental resolve to, you know, overcome those two big injury setbacks and, you know, still be a force at Super Rugby. And, you know, he'll absolutely be pushing for a starting spot, that's for sure. And, you know, they can build quite a nice dynamic there between TJ and Cam Roygaard. But, you know, it says a lot about TJ's character that he's been able to come back from those injuries and, get back into that Hurricane side. And, you know, he'll certainly be trying to seek higher honours this year, that's for sure. And, you know, nothing would be off the table in that regard. But, yeah, just great to see him back out there. And, you know, you can expect him to keep pushing Cam Roygaard, which, you know, I think can only benefit both of them and then benefit the Hurricanes.
Big time. It almost feels as if Falau Fakatava and Finley Christie, you've dropped down the pecking order slightly with the way those two, well, certainly TJ's return the other night and Cam, as you mentioned, only building on his World Cup performances from France last year. All right, gents, that'll do us for the week. Ollie, mate, fantastic to have you on. Keen insights from across the ditch. Really appreciate making the time on this Monday. And, mate, hopefully have you back again later in the year.
Yeah, all good, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Christie, always good to see you, mate.
Brucey, always good. You're right. I'm just there's two or three Super Rugby matches this weekend that are going to be crackers, isn't it? And if the Reds Brumbies, I'm really excited about that from a Wallabies national selection kind of perspective. And then there's a couple of other good derbies. So the Crusaders Chiefs, Tars Rebels that Friday night. That's something to look forward to because there's a fair bit on the line for their respective coaches, I'd say.
And gives you something to do on Good Friday, which is otherwise probably the most boring day of the year. No religious insults intended with that one, that caveat there, team. All right, guys, we'll talk to you again in 7 days. Until then, enjoy the footy. Cheers.
Thanks Brucey.